Robin Miller, we have what we will call our first annual IndyCar Silly Season podcast here. This is definitely going to be the week in news for IndyCar, so that's not going away. But honestly, brother, the big topics at hand happen to be Silly Season. You just wrote a great story to launch our Silly Season. Let's start off, though, to get the most recent race kind of through our filter before we jump into the primary topic of Silly Season, and that would be Toronto. What stood out? I mean, there certainly were a lot of themes, and it was a race to me that seemed like the first half was a lot different than the second half, but what stood out to you for who won, who lost, and who maybe went home a little bit unsatisfied?
Stood out for me were three things. Graham Rahal in qualifying on a used set of reds, almost wins the pole and breaks up the Penske triumvirate. And Elio's start from third to first going into turn one was just amazing. And just how well he ran all weekend is continuing his, you know, just he continues to drive maybe better than ever before. And probably that Dixon's crash with Will Power wasn't nearly as bad as it could have been because he managed to finish 10th. So, I mean, it. You know, I saw my call after the race. I said, man, that could have been a lot worse. He goes, you're telling me. I mean, you know, to come back to finish 10th is pretty impressive after a big crash on the lap one. But, you know, I hate that the pits aren't open all the time. And it comes around. It helps Dixon. It hurts Dixon. It helps Graham Rahal. It hurts him. It helps Elio. It hurts him. It's helped, you know, Hinch said, I've been on both sides, and he's right. But I just hate to see, like, those three guys are pulling away. Castroneves, Pagano, and Graham Rahal were smoking everybody, and they don't have a chance. You know, the yellow comes out, the pits are closed, they're not in the pits, and is it their fault for not pitting? I suppose that, you know, that was a couple of letters to the mailbag this week. Well, Penske screwed Elio again. Well, I guess when the pit window opens, maybe you're supposed to do it, no matter how good a rhythm you got going. I mean, what do you think?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the big beneficiary of how that yellow, or how things went down when Tony Kanaan nosed into the tire wall there was Joseph Newgarden. And so you say, ah, well, boy, you know, look at that. It was them capitalizing on Tony's mistake. That's the reason why Joseph got the advantage. I spoke with Tim Cindric yesterday, and he said, we'd actually called him in. I mean, it wasn't a case of our reacting to Tony. We just, by chance, that's when we had happened to call him in. And just as we called him in, that's when Tony nosed in. So there was a major element of luck here compared to brilliant strategy of being the first to see Tony going in, Joseph being in the right, you know, piece of real estate on the track. So there was definite luck involved. And I don't know. What we're really talking about is luck versus bad luck. And if you're on the wrong side of how the yellow plays, you're the one crying, I should say, crying, complaining about the IndyCar pit lane policies and being on the wrong side of that. And if you're the other half, then you're super happy in how things played out. To Hinch's point, in theory, by the end of the year, it all averages out. You're going to get boned a couple times, or at least once. You're going to be the beneficiary at least once, you would think. So, you know, you and I had a conversation, Robin. I don't think we've mentioned this before, but you and I had a conversation, a great one at Long Beach, with a race director you and I know, someone who is very skilled at what he does, might even know a little bit about IndyCar. And let's just say that his approach to leaving the pits open and his general treatment of yellows is something that has had a number of high-profile and influential IndyCar team owners begging him to come back to oversee IndyCar's race control. And I don't want to turn this into bashing Dan Davis, Art Lyon-Dyke, Brian Barnhart, or Max Pappas, but, you know, this is just something that I'm thinking most fans would agree. It's more of a sore spot and a continual sore spot than something where people go, oh, well, you know, this is the best possible solution, and we're just going to have to make do with it. So, who knows? But I do know, and you and I do know, and you and I listen to someone who said, hey, if I got the call, I would, I'd certainly be open to assisting. So, But that definitely made the race. The other one that stood out for me, Robin, was Spencer Pigot, the one man passing machine on blacks to open the race. I'm telling you, that kid continues to get hit by the cartoon anvil in the races. Does not have the championship finishing position right now that he wants. But if you tuned in to Toronto, the one kid that you saw going forward and making passes, Spencer Pigot. I mean, if we're thinking of 2017 as an audition, I hope that there are those with jobs paying attention, because that kid is showing that he is a future Newgarden, a future Ray Hall, you know, someone that we think is going to develop into a monster.
And I think, you know, to Ed's credit, Ed Carpenter's credit, I think he knows that and he pays attention and he gave him a ride and I think he believes in him. So I think, you know, Spencer feels a pretty good loyalty that, hey, somebody didn't leave me by the side of the road. Ed has given me a chance. So hopefully that'll all work out.
All right. Well, let's put Toronto behind us and look to the future. I think the first of the dominoes that we are expecting to fall is our friends at Andretti Autosport moving from Honda to Chevy. We had discussions going back to Road America in late June, and I think there was a little more optimism that Andretti Autosport would stay with Honda. Let's just say that their current engine manufacturer is not nearly as confident as they once were that Michael's engine covers will be bearing the name Honda next year or in the immediate future. And Michael conceded to us that they are indeed talking to Chevy. Tell me a little bit about that background, Robin, because we know there's potentially some financial incentives that are needed on the team side, and there's also some car count needed on Chevy's side if they're going to keep fighting Honda.
Well, I think when you think about Chevrolet, when they came, I mean, you know, Andretti had a lot of success with them, and Hinch won 3 races. Ryan Hunter Ray is the guy they really want back. They really like the way he develops race cars. And I mean, Michael was very open Sunday morning after practice because he'd been at the Formula E race on Saturday, so we hadn't seen him all weekend. And he's like, hey, man, we had a good relationship with Chevrolet, and I went to my sponsors, my team, to look at this offer pretty serious. And, I mean, it wasn't one of those, no, we're happy where we're at, no comments. I mean, he was very open, I thought. And I think that, you know, with Schmidt-Peterson becoming the test team for the new car for Honda, I mean, all the signs point to Michael taking the money, and who can blame him? I mean, you know, like you put, I think, in one of your stories, I mean, 3 of his 4 cars really didn't have a sponsor at the last couple races. You know, Ryan's got DHL, but in this day and age, if somebody wants to write you a big check, you're going to take it.
You also look at the fact, Robin, that from being a team on the rise, with the arrival of Eric Bretzman during the offseason, Ryan Hunter-Reay's engineer Ray Gosselin no longer having to split his time between being technical director and race engineer, and just a general reshuffling or straightening, maybe you could even say, of their engineering department, that team as a whole has been a lot more competitive than they were last year. Not saying they're the most competitive Honda team, but we know that they were in fairly dire straits in 2016. We look at where they need to go, though, and you would think that with the infusion of cash, with a highly motivated Chevy needing to backfill losing the 4 cars from Ganassi that went away at the end of the year, it all makes sense. So, at least for me, when we're talking silly season, at this point, and I would imagine you'd agree, the big surprise would be if Michael didn't go to Andretti. So in my book, at least, I have them moved, and that's going to be a done deal, hopefully announced some point here in the near future. Provided all that happens, as we expect, though, that does start to knock open the driver market, right? Where does Takuma Sato go? He's a Honda guy. He's going to have to go somewhere with his money. We know from last year, from what he was shopping around, it was $2 million in sponsorship, free Honda engine, but worth about $1 million. So about $3 million, that's half a budget. And Michael took that on board and, you know, has been able to fill that with a little bit of sponsorship here and there. The Ruoff mortgage folks stepped in for the Indy 500, so that was great. But you know, really what Takuma has been offering is half a budget. what Honda team might be, interested in taking that on, knowing that they have to fill the other half. Then you have Alexander Rossi, who we know Honda's very keen on, and they would want to hold on to. If I'm Chevy, I'm thinking, man, all-American kid, Indy 500 winner. We would love to get that kid. What do you think, Robin? If we get Michael moving over to Chevy, looks like they're going to have at least two vacancies, or potentially two vacancies to fill on that team with their new Chevy-powered cars. Plus, where would Rossi and Sato go possibly?
Well, I think you're right, and I think Hinch is another big key because he's a free agent. If he, he said he'd like to stay at Sam's. Sam says I'd like to keep him. There's no contract yet, so let's say Hinch goes back to Andretti where we won three races, and he's obviously somebody that is going to be in demand from a lot of teams. So that gives him and Hunter Ray that would be a pretty good 1-2 punch. And Marco is, he's all over the place. Sometimes he's slow and sometimes he's fast, and he had a good weekend at Toronto. So if he gets things going, you got three bullets right there. But Sato, does he end up with Sam Schmidt? Does he end up with Dale Coyne? Does he end up with a, oh no, sorry, that's Chevy. Where would he go? He'll go somewhere. Now, somebody was trying to tell me the other day they thought he might retire, but I don't, I find that hard to believe. And then, so Rossi, who I think Honda made sure had a ride this year, they don't want to lose him. I don't think they want to lose Hinch either. It's just interesting because Sam Schmidt said over the weekend at Toronto, I said, how's it looking for Arrows to run two cars? He goes, well, I think it's looking pretty good. They're really gung ho. So if he gets that, if there are two Arrows cars, he can just hire two people. He doesn't have to take any money. Because Arrows is a fabulous sponsor. And then he could still take money for a third car if Mikel Elocian is coming back or whoever might be in that third car. So those are probably, I would think those could be options. I think Mike Hall really likes Hinch. So it's Ganassi would be a possibility. Rossi to Ganassi would be a possibility because Ganassi could have three empty seats. TK, Max, Chilton, and Charlie Kimball.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Although we're talking silly season, which maybe implies pure speculation, in reality, there's a lot of legwork and a lot of information and a lot of digging into things like you did with your story this week, of going and talking to people and, from trailer to trailer to try and get the down low on where situations are at, even though they're not fully complete. So when you say that, Ganassi could potentially have three open seats next year for a four-car team, it sounds crazy, but it's actually true.
Right. And it's funny. Some guy wrote a letter on Facebook. He goes, oh, this is just all guessing, but it's fun to read and it's fun to guess with him. Well, no, it's not all just guessing because, anybody can guess. You have to trust that our people aren't lying. And I got to tell you that Chilton, I thought, was very honest and said, not sure what I'm going to do yet. Because I ran the scenario by about Carlin, obviously, and Carlin and it's interesting to me is Chilton and Kimball both drove for Carlin, and God, what a shot in the arm that would be for IndyCar to have a two-car Carlin team start out next year with Kimball and Chilton. But Max is also pretty pragmatic, and he's like, but this is also one of the best teams in IndyCar racing, and maybe it's a good time to stay because he goes, usually my third season is my best in my history with teams have been. So I think that's a big decision he's going to make after he gets married. Charlie was, I think, pretty honest too. He's like, man, things have changed a little bit in the pharmaceutical business, but I've had a great run. I'm not sure I'll be back with Chip. I'd like to be. I'm not sure exactly what our situation is, sponsorship-wise, but I think they're going to be, Novo Nordisk is going to be with me. And I'm pretty sure I'll have a full-time ride. So I think he's being honest. I think when you look at Schmidt, he's suddenly, look at this team. They're kind of becoming one of Honda's favorites. And I guess the other thing we probably forgot to mention in this whole Honda thing is if Bob Rahal runs a second car to give Graham a teammate, who would you pick? Who out of those guys? Hinchcliffe, Rossi, Sato? I don't know. I just don't know who might end up if they had enough money to run two cars. So there's so many possibilities, but it's fun. Like you and I said, it usually happens at Mid-Ohio. This time it happened before we go to Mid-Ohio. But anybody that thinks there's not a whole bunch of stuff going on right now between trailer and trailer, it's kind of fun.
The other thing too to mention is, you know, our boy Tony Kanaan in his 20th year right now. He is he would like to be back with Chip. He's expressed an interest in the past to race, you know, spend his final year or two or however many with AJ Foyt. We know that AJ has been was very honest with you in saying, I'm not impressed by anybody or anything that's happened this year. So if anybody thinks that, you know, their position is safe, try again. So, you know, again, we know Scott Dixon is going to be leading the Chip Ganassi Racing Charge. No question about that. We also know that sponsorship, if Max were to take his Gallagher sponsorship over to Carlin, that would be a deficit. If Charlie were to take the Novo Nordisk over to Carlin or someone else, that would be a deficit. We don't think there's enough NTT data sponsorship to cover two cars. So as you've been saying for a while now, we think that's going to be on Dixie's number 9 Honda. So at that point, you do say, well, could Chip be facing one full-time entry and the need to fill one, two, however many seats to not only repopulate the team? Honda's certainly not going to want Chip to be down to one car, and Chip's business model doesn't really work on one car. So that's where you do start looking, and you do have to wonder who has a budget to bring, knowing that half of their driver roster brings a budget. They're not, you know, traditional paid pros like a Dixon or a Kanaan. So, you know, definitely a lot of questions. And I think that's another thing that's going to shake out here, Robin. We don't have all the answers yet, but silly season is going to be silly. There's going to be a lot of movement, but we don't know how many drivers are out there, either in IndyCar, in GP2 or F2, Formula One, Indy Lights, that have a budget that could come in and fill a vacancy at a Ganassi or a Schmidt or a Rahal. So definitely questions on who's got the money to fill some of these seats that have been paid for.
Here's the other thing we forget about, Marshall. Honda gave Ganassi a lot of money to change. So he's got some, if he'd lose Max and Charlie, it'd look devastating. But I think he's probably got a little left in the kitty from what Honda gave him. And you know, you're getting ready to do a story here, I think, on how many of these Indy Lights guys might be stepping up. And your story the other day, Stefan Johansson's guy, help me out, Felix Rosenqvist. I mean, to have another test at Ganassi tells me they're pretty interested in him, aren't they?
Well, definitely. They also, you know, that's a kid where I think if they were able to put a budget behind him, that kid's a beast. I mean, that nothing against our boy Ed Jones last year, but Felix Rosenqvist was the most impressive kid in lights, period, bar none. And he only did, I don't even think he got to the halfway point if we're looking at total number of Indy Lights races. And that kid came out, won 3 races, and just blew everybody else away. Had he stayed in the championship, I think the title would have been over early. I mean, this kid is truly, truly amazing. And, you know, he's coming in with a lot of success behind him out of Europe. Has been over there this year, back in Europe, doing Formula E. Has also been doing, you know, some sports car stuff. But, yeah, I'm just, then also Steph Johansson would have two of his clients driving for Ganassi. So that would be fun negotiations. But all kidding aside, if we were to have Felix in a car alongside Dixon, that'd be the first time in a while where Chip had a truly young, up-and-coming talent to develop. I mean, we haven't seen that. You and I were a lot younger the last time that happened, but I would love to see it because I do think Felix is something special. And then you start to look at, you know, one of the other, the third seat, the fourth seat, and would a, you know, here's something. We know that Chip Ganassi Racing had no relationship of any real consequence with Sebastian Bourdais before they and Ford hired Seb to drive one of their Ford GT sports cars. In the time that they've gotten to know Seb since that program kicked off in 2016, we know they've fallen in love with the guy. We know that they have seen in him something that is world class. That, again, that shouldn't be a surprise. Guy's four-time Champ Car champion. We know how good he is. The world knows how good he is. But as an organization, they'd never worked with him. I can tell you for sure that if Sebastian is at all available, and there's any budget that can be put behind it, you know, the idea of a Dixon Bourdais tandem at minimum is fascinating. Is there enough money to go around to get a Hinchcliffe there, a Rossi, a Rosenqvist, you know, among the options? I don't know if we're going to see a four-car Chip Ganassi team next year. I would say that if these changes happen that we think might, with Max Chilton going to the team in Carlin that his father is the primary investor in, and Charlie Kimball were to go there as well, well, you know, not knowing what's going to happen with Tony, would obviously love to see him stay. But you know, there are a couple of really intriguing options, all budget-dependent, but you know, I can't wait to find out what it's going to look like when we get there, brother, and we haven't even covered all the teams yet. You know, look at Dale Coyne. If Seb is back, and you have to believe there's going to be some pretty amazing loyalty, right? After this, after the big crash, the team, you know, hasn't, the team has said, hey, we've got a car for you, let's go racing again, which they're going to do. But you've also got Esteban Gutierrez, who, you know, maybe isn't bringing a fortune, but is bringing some money. And we know Dale does like money, as do most people. Ed Jones, he brings some money, but hopefully we'll have enough to continue there if he isn't hired somewhere else. But, you know, potentially that is three candidates to run at Dale Coyne. Would Dale consider doing three cars or two? What if Seb goes somewhere else? What if Gutierrez moves? You know, I would say it would appear on the surface like Dale Coyne might be the only stable team if we're talking silly season, but I'm not sure that's the case. What do you think?
You just kind of got to wonder, would Craig Hampson have come in if it was just a 1 year? You got to think Seb, maybe, you think it's probably a 2 year deal, wouldn't you think? I mean, that's what I would think. So I don't know, but I know him and Mike Hall had a long conversation in Toronto, and people were coming up saying, hey, did you see Mike Hall's talking to Bourdais? And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, they might be talking about sports cars. I don't know. But it's interesting to me that there's so much talent out there to spread around, and there it just, Charlie Kimball, you know, Charlie says, I think there's going to be a bunch of changes for next year. New body work, and it's going to look better, and hopefully race even a little bit better than it has. So the big dominoes, Andretti to Chevy, does Hinch stay or does he go? Where's Rossi and Sato? Could Kanaan end up at SPM? Because Honda likes having Tony around. I don't know. I just think, to me, the possibilities are endless. But then you see a guy like Ed Jones. He's done a great job this year. You don't want to see him left out. You mentioned already Spencer Pigot. He's earned the right to have a full-time ride. He needs some oval track experience quickly. I mean, he just can't run the Indy 500. He's got to get in there and learn ovals, because he's got the potential to be a hell of a race driver. So, I don't know. I know this. We'll probably burn up a lot of minutes in the next 4 or 5 weeks talking to people.
And let's close on a couple other folks that stand out. Obviously, J.R. Hildebrand had a really strong performance at Iowa. Had a semi-positive day at Toronto. Was definitely running in a strong position for a while. Had a few things go wrong on his end, but you know, curious to see where Ed Carpenter Racing will go. An interesting thing last weekend too, Robin, which I guess this is dipping back into Toronto a little bit, but you and I had a little bit of a giggle at how on Thursday, big announcement, driver change. Sebastian Saavedra replacing our boy Mikhail Aloshin. Nothing mentioned about this just being for Toronto. Nothing mentioned about, you know, we're just going to park Mikhail, let him kind of get his wits about him again and keep going. Very very direct in the press release about, you know, no further comments, no one will be speaking, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And you go, wow, okay, geez, this sounds a little grumpy. And then, you know, you catch up with the team on Friday and you get the, oh, well, no, this is probably just going to be for one race. We think he's, you know, he should be back from Mid-Ohio. And I don't know. It seems to me like there was a definite hard conversation that must have taken place between the original announcement and when everybody turned up at Toronto on Friday, because no disrespect to Sebastian Saavedra or Gary Peterson, but the reason people partner with Gary Peterson on a car is he brings money. and Sebastian, who hasn't driven on a road or street course in 2 years. I mean, let's be honest here. There are other people that could have been called if Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports was truly looking for the best, fastest, most capable person to put in that car for one race just to show McHale that this can be done in a better way, in a better light, whether it's a Tristan Vautier, an Oriol Servia, a Gabby Chavez. I mean, there are a number of names that could have been dropped into that seat. I don't know about you, brother, but there are a lot of things that didn't quite add up. Nonetheless, I'm hoping we get McHale back. But what do you think? Did that seem a little bit odd to you as well, or was that just me?
I talked to Lotion during the race on Sunday, and I said, man, you know, you had that race won last year till they sent you out in front of somebody. So I said, I'm pretty sure they want you in the car. And he says, I hope so. But Saavedra might have shaken him up a bit because he ran pretty damn well in the race. So I think that had to get McHale's attention. When you stick somebody in a car, hadn't been, like you said, for 2 years, and he didn't qualify badly, but he raced really well. I think he got up to 7th or 8th on his own, and he's had some pretty fast guys behind him. So that probably opened McHale's eyes a little bit, and maybe he needs to calm down a little bit. I always like the guy's spirit, and I always just think about a guy in a country where he's pretty much a stranger, and he's trying to race against, you know, trying to build his resume, and he's pretty fearless, and I don't know, there's something about him I've always liked, and I hope he gets to, you know, he hope he gets a chance to go back to Mid-Ohio.
Last item, so one leftover bit from Iowa that I loved, and I know this struck you as well. What we had coming out of Iowa was a high probability of Elio moving to sports cars next year. That's something we had conversations with him there both before the race and then during the race on NBCSN. And after winning the race, what was the immediate announcement to everyone in the press room, Robin?
Elio will only be taking questions about today's race, not about his future. So everybody laughed. But he was funny because I saw him. You know, he was good right before the race. He said, look, if I win the championship, it's going to make this decision tough. So he's pretty much kind of admitted, you know, they've never ever come out, and Cindric or Elio, even Roger, when I talked to him after, you know, no one's ever said, no, that's not going to happen. This isn't going to be, it's kind of like the Montoya thing. I think they make their decisions and they kind of string people along, but Elio seemed pretty confident. He had a ride for next year with Penske, just probably not in an Indy car except for the Indy 500. And Cindric said, I've been getting all kinds of hate mail. You said I threw him under the, you know, I threw him out. I said, no, I didn't say you threw him out. I told you exactly what I was going to write. I wrote exactly what I said I was going to write, that he was going to be moved to sports cars and stay as an Indy 500 driver, and Roger wanted to go back to three cars. And it really had, you know, somebody said, sent a letter to the mailbag day, so Marshall, that said, what if they bring Alonso in to take that fourth seat? I don't think, it's got nothing to do with Elio's performance. I just think they want to run three cars, period. And they want two big stars to head their sports car program. And in your good column today or yesterday and on racer.com, I mean, sports car racing is going to be a serious threat to IndyCar. I mean, they got a lot of big teams, a lot of big names, a lot of big manufacturers. It's kind of like that ALMS of a few years ago when we were all kind of like, damn, where'd all these guys come from?
Yeah, that's another thing, too, that's going to be quite interesting, which is maybe a good cap to our podcast here and our silly season discussion with the new partnership of Acura/Honda and Penske, and the new partnership between Mazda and Yost Racing. We know that both are going to be hiring, and definitely hiring a lot of serious talent. We would expect Roger to, and Acura/Honda to pull from a lot of names that we would consider to be familiar to us in IndyCar, you know, drafting in a Pagano and some others for some of the endurance races, obviously not the full season stuff, but you also look over on the Mazda and Yost side, and yeah, I mean, if we look at some of the folks here, where you go, you know, is this driver going to have a full-time seat next year in IndyCar? Are they going to be in the outside looking in? You know, what if AJ Foyt decides to release both drivers? Is Carlos Munoz going to get hired by another IndyCar team? I mean, for the Indy 500, I would say for sure, but elsewhere? Yeah, the reason he went to Foyt, among, there were a couple of reasons, but one of them was the family financial backing was cut off at Andretti's going into 2017, and he really did need to find a place that was going to hire him. Well, without the financial backing to bring elsewhere, if he is no longer a Foyt driver, where does a talent like Carlos Munoz end up? If he's probably not going to be hired by an IndyCar team, would he be someone, you know, a Penske or a Yost or Mazda would want to hire as a top-tier prototype guy? You know, we could run down the list of potentials if Connor Daly is on the outside looking in. So I think you could see IMSA be a landing spot for a couple of IndyCar drivers. You know, Takuma Sato, if he decides he's done in IndyCar, would he be a natural fit for the Penske Acura IMSA program? Again, we're throwing out possibilities here, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of hiring, a little bit of plucking of talent from IndyCar over to that side if there are some folks who don't have jobs at the end of the year. And then we even look at our friend Michael Shank, who was hoping to get that IMSA program from Acura. His current Acura program, the GT program, is only for 1 year, and he knew that going in, signed the deal knowing that it was only for 1 year, hoped he would get this prototype contract, didn't. And so now he's in a position of wondering what he's going to do next year. Would love to be an IndyCar, would love to be back in prototypes, but from a funding standpoint, his manufacturer deal's coming to an end here in October. And where does Michael Shank go? The easy answer is he should go to IndyCar. Great. Drop me an email. I'll tell you where to send the check for $6 million to Michael Shank so he can do that. But the money that required to do these things has to come from somewhere. So, again, a lot of interesting things on how this IndyCar sports car dynamic is going to settle out here in the coming months.
But you know what? Think about this. Penske's got to have, he needs a lot of good mechanics for his sports car team. Another reason to go from four to three cars in IndyCar, take some of those mechanics to the sports car side. I mean, that's going to be a pretty big project. So, we'll be interested to see what you got on that topic, brother. And you get to go to Mid-Ohio. Yay, Raw. We'll see you at the IndyCar test next week on Tuesday at the Speedway. And we'll probably do our podcast on Wednesday.
Well, there you go. This has been The Week in IndyCar. I'm Robin Miller. That's Marshall Pruitt. Thanks for listening.